Hey everyone, welcome to Just Mental Health with Steph and M, the podcast where we discuss mental health through a social justice lens. I'm Emily.
And I'm Stephanie. A quick disclaimer before we get started. We are mental health professionals, but this is not to be taken as professional advice.
We are also aware that our privilege may cloud our perspective on some topics, and we not only welcome, but encourage you to message us with criticism and corrections. Let's get started. Okay, our small business is Steely Boutique. It's in Wicker Park, Chicago, right by my office. And I love to go there between my sessions, and they know me there. And one of them that works there actually went to school with my sister. And I always spend way too much money there. So, so Samantha Clark is the owner. She says Steely Boutique is on a mission to bring premium stylish clothing to women everywhere. Founded by a seasoned buyer with a deep-seated passion for fashion and an exquisite sense of style, Steely curates a unique assortment of the hottest brands that are a staple of every closet. With a store located in Wicker Park, you can stop by and see the newest arrivals and try on all your favorite items, or shop online at shopsteely.com with free shipping and returns. You will find brands such as Aster the Label, Just Black Denim, Daydreamer, Heartloom, We Wore What, and many more. Follow Steely on Instagram at Steely_boutique to be the first to learn of what's new and special sales. So I highly recommend them. Their clothes are very good quality. I have actually my summertime wedding guest dress and my wintertime wedding guest dress are from them. So yeah, definitely check them out. And now a quick ad. Okay, so I'm very excited to introduce our guest, Goldie. She's a friend of mine. She is a comedian and an artist. She works for a nonprofit, and she's currently a stripper in Chicago. She's been a stripper for a little over a year. She's been in Chicago a little over a year and stripping for a little over a year. So welcome, Goldie. We're excited to have you.
Thank you.
So let's start off. We're just curious what got you into stripping. What made you want to go into the field? What do you like about it? What do you, you know, just tell us a little bit about what you do.
So after I graduated college, and that summer I was living at home, and I wanted to move to Chicago. I had plans to move to Chicago, but I had like a few months that I was just living at home, saving up and stuff, and I was waitressing, and I was like, I need way more money than this to save up. And kind of like financial insecurity was like an anxiety of mine, because I don't really have, you know, a support system in that way that would, like, you know, if something happened that I would be able to just get money for it. So I was a little scared. And my friend had been posting stuff from a strip club in Ohio. And I was like, oh, okay, like, let me talk to her about it, and see if they're accepting dancers, because I'm an actor and a dancer. So I felt like I could probably do it, but I also just thought it would be like a funny thing to do, to just try, because it was funny, so not what anyone would expect from me. So I was like, you know what, this might be just a cool experience to have, and I have nothing to lose. So I basically met up with her, and we got my shoes and my outfit, and I went that night to the club, and they were just like, yeah, go ahead, like, you can work tonight. So I worked that night, and like, I remember going up on stage and everyone was like going crazy. Like, it was not, I guess, very typical to have a lot of like stage presence right away, because people were kind of scared when they first went on stage. So I think that was like shocking to some people who worked there. So I immediately like got a thrill off of that. And then when I went home at like 3 a.m. or whatever, I had like $300 cash or something. And that was not something I was used to. Like, I was like, wow, this is like, you know, a lot of cash to be going home in my hand, like after one night of working. And it wasn't even that like, you know, taxing. Like, it was fun for me. So over like the next couple months, I just was going for it and just like, you know, doing it as much as I could. I was also taking summer classes because I needed two credits two classes. So I was doing my classes during the day and then going to the strip club at night. And it was just really fun. I didn't think that I was going to keep doing it after I moved to Chicago. But I realized like I, you know, wanted to work in something that was fulfilling to me as far as social justice. Like I wanted something that felt like I was making a difference and something that was artistic and creatively fulfilling. And I kind of realized once I got to Chicago and I was getting jobs and I was like going and doing comedy stuff too, I was like, oh, like this doesn't pay. Like this doesn't pay. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, you know, it would be nice if I didn't have to like work myself into the ground as a waitress and I could just work like, you know, a couple nights a week and be making my rent. And then I could just focus on the work that I actually wanted to be doing in this kind of period where I'm a postgraduate that needs to get into this industry and I'm not making a lot of money yet. So that was kind of what got me into it in Chicago. So it was like maybe a couple months after I moved, I started dancing here. And that was kind of funny because one of my friends from the club in Ohio came to visit Chicago and we were like, we should just go and like work one night at this club and just like test it out. And I got in there and it was way bigger than the club in Ohio and way nicer. And there were so many girls there and they were all really cool and just like really smart and like awesome. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is like the energy I've been missing. Like, I really want to do this. Mm-hmm.
So, that's yeah. Awesome. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, that's so cool. So what is your major in? Just out of curiosity.
So I had a double major in acting and women's gender and sexuality studies.
That's perfect. Like the perfect combination, right?
Yeah, people are like, oh wow, you really got your degree in this. And I'm like, yeah. No, it's not really, you know, women's gender and sexuality studies. People are like, oh, you must know a lot about sex. I'm like, yeah, we didn't really talk a lot about that. It was, you know, maybe a little bit, but it did kind of broaden my horizons a little bit to where I felt more comfortable with sex work and like I knew a little more about it going in.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. So I feel like that's usually kind of the story that, you know, people will tell, like, well, I needed to make money and this was a really good way to make money. And then I did it and I loved it. And now it's just, you know, like it's fun and it pays your rent. And there's, you know, a camaraderie and like a community there with the other girls. So, you know, that sound like there's a lot of positives to that. You know, there's a lot of positives that came from that experience and from doing this work for you. Do you mind talking about some of the negatives for it that you've experienced or that you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like during college struggled a lot with like mental health and it was kind of based around like this theme of like violence towards women just because it was like sexual assault and my friend was murdered by a man, like an angry man. So that was kind of the kind of thing that was bringing me down as far as mental health. And so I kind of went through 4 years of just feeling really like beaten down by it. And feeling like people didn't really understand what I was going through. And so there is, you know, a problem with male customers abusing like female workers, and that's in any industry, but especially when you're more vulnerable, being, you know, not fully clothed, and like, you know, you're in a kind of a semi-private area with a man, like that's gonna happen. But for me, in my head, I had already seen that as like, this is just a thing that happens to women. So I was very aware of that just kind of being a dynamic of life. And so the thing that really struck me when I first started working in Ohio was, I remember like the first time I felt really someone stepped over my boundary was like maybe a few weeks in, like this guy just grabbed my crotch, and like we were at the you know, out on the floor or whatever, and this guy just like grabbed my crotch, and I immediately like slapped him and got so angry and was just screaming like, get the fuck out of here, get the fuck. And I just chased him out, and I'm like, oh my god, like in my head I'm also like, oh my god, I'm crazy, people are gonna think I'm crazy. And all the men just like rushed out, followed him out, they're like, get out, get out, and you know, they ended up like beating him up outside or something. I mean, they're really, it's a different world, but they're really like, they're trying to reinforce like, this is what happens to you when you do something like that. And like the girls just like came over with like a blanket and water, and they all took me back and was just like trying to comfort me and tell me like, we got your back, like, you know, and telling me about their experiences. So I was aware pretty early on that that kind of thing happens in the club as well. But I felt very protected and like comforted pretty immediately. And so it was just very different than my previous experiences of sexual assault. And I think before I had felt more, it was the aftermath of feeling like crazy, or like I had put myself in a bad situation, feeling like people were blaming me for that and wanting me to just avoid sex altogether, going out and partying, stuff like that. Like, and so it was very much a thing of me like, well, if something like this happens to me, it's my fault because I put myself in this position. Whereas when I got to the strip club, it was like, this could happen at any time. This is like a real threat. And it's how we deal with it and how we protect each other that matters. And that's really helped me with that. So that's like one area. Also, just like overexhaustion is a big thing. Like, you know, when girls have pressure to like meet certain financial like deadlines and things like that, they might overwork themselves. And so it's just like any job with that too. You have to really work on your schedule. And it is, you know, you look at someone working 2 days a week versus working like 40 hours a week, and it's like, oh, that's not as much. But you have to remember, it's a very taxing job physically, mm-hmm. emotionally. I'm walking in like 6-inch heels for 8 hours a night. I could never.
I know, I'm so bad at heels. Like I wear them for like 10 minutes and I'm like,
yeah.
You definitely get used to it. Like my feet are pretty much used to it. But if I take a break, I'm like, oh, geez, that's really rough.
I guess it's like ballerinas. Like they get used to the strain it puts on their feet. And like, you must get used to that with the heels. But like, no, my feet are too.
Yeah, I can imagine the physical strain. And you've shared with me before, you know, I mean, also looking at like what the research says about sexual assault is that the most important thing for healing is having people support you, having people believe you, having people have your back. And, you know, kind of what you were just saying, like, this is the first time, right, in your life that you feel like you had that community.
Yeah,
feeling that is for you,
because that's the thing. I mean, sexual assault is not gonna end in a certain environment unless it ends in society as a whole, which is like obviously something that we want to happen, but it's not in the foreseeable future. So it really is, you know, we have to be aware that it is going to happen. It is something you have to plan for, and you have to have those things in place. How am I going to react? How am I going to protect myself? Who am I going to go to? Do I trust the people I work with? Do I have a support system of friends and family that are going to understand?
And that's, I mean, you're saying that and we're like shaking our heads like, yeah, that's what you have to do. But then like thinking about it outside of the context of just like, this is life for women is like, that's crazy that you have to plan for sexual harassment and sexual assault
at your job.
Everywhere in life.
I mean, yeah, particularly. Yeah,
it's like you have to always be like, and like you said, when it happens, there's that thought of, did I overreact? Did I lead them on? Did I do something, you know, wrong to cause this? Like, and so then you always have to sort of be on guard about that. Like, what am I doing? What am I saying? Am I smiling too much? Am I giving the wrong impression? Like, as if you have some sort of control over it. And ultimately you don't. That's why it's called assault. You had no control over it. So, but it's really interesting that you say, and I guess I'd never really, like, I knew this, but I never really thought about it in that context of like, yeah, you're working at a club where you are dancing in front of men in a sexualized situation. And yet, how many women go into office jobs or restaurant jobs are the worst, honestly, from my experience, or, you know, any job, and are sexually harassed and assaulted on a regular basis. And like, the culture most of the time is very different. In the situation you described, like, the other customers like kind of intervened and stood up for you. And then you had this community of the other dancers that were helping you and consoling you and letting you know that they support you. How often does that happen, like, in an office? Like, I've never seen it happen. And even though the situation where you would think would lead to like, well, you're not putting yourself in that situation if you're going to work 9 to 5 somewhere, yet there's still so much victim blaming and no support for people that report harassment or assault at work. So it's just really interesting. I never considered that, but I think that's a very unique part of that job, is the expectations and the openness, it sounds like, of the girls talking about those things and supporting each other.
There's also not a professional decorum. Like, we are independent contractors. We don't have to take shit from people. And when you're a waitress, if somebody's screaming at you, sometimes you do just have to accept it.
Yes, true.
Yeah. And there's the whole thing, you know, that like, a lot of people think that women who dress a certain way or like sluts, like don't have respect for their bodies, blah blah blah, and you know, that's what, and you know, you can obviously speak to this, is like, so empowering about sex work is that you can like, you know, there's this newer movement of like, women have the right to dress however they want and not be judged for it, and it can even be empowering to express your sexuality like more publicly. And this kind of like is a, like, stripping is a big manifestation of that, and probably leads to empowerment. And there is this line between like, you know, that's your sexuality, like that's your body, and you are choosing to do this with your body, and everyone around you is expected to maintain boundaries. And I think that's really great that I wonder if, I'm sure not all strip clubs are like that, but I'm glad that you are in one that has such a community of safety. Like, you know, unfortunately, I was going to say if, but when something like that happens to you, like even the customers had your back. And, but yeah, I mean, it's just great that you're, you know, part of this movement of like sexual empowerment. Yeah. That's all I wanted to share. Yeah, so maybe we can talk more about like if you can speak to like bigger picture issues, like larger scale societal problems as far as protection of this industry. If you have any,
yeah, I mean, I do think we're like kind of in a turning point because there's been a lot of strikes, like the women, I think it was Star Gardens in LA, like we were all following their strike, like they were putting it all over social media and stuff, and then they ended up getting a contract with Actors Equity, but you know, unions and things like that and people coming together to get rights for strippers has been, you know, something that's happened for a long time. And I think we do have an advantage over other sex workers just because it is legal to do what we do. So I think, you know, decriminalization of sex work would make it easier to get rights for everybody who participates in sex work. But, you know, I think the women who were striking were going through problems of safety, of, you know, people not intervening. There was, you know, there was just a lot of kind of corruption, which it makes you see like, oh, it is easy to get away with that. And I think our club is pretty good at like protecting girls and not doing those things that like raise red flags as much. But another thing is being an independent contractor and not really having, you know, the reason a lot of us choose the independent contractor is because the option of being an employee is sometimes much worse. And I don't know much about it because I've never done it. I've just been told by everyone to not choose that option and to be an independent contractor. But if you are an employee, you're eligible for benefits and you can have your taxes deducted like mm-hmm. on your payroll or whatever. You get a wage for being there. But I don't know what change that would be as far as like what if the money that we make is ours, you know? Mm-hmm. And the good thing about being an independent contractor is you can take everything. It's all yours, you know?
Mm-hmm.
True, true. And that's really interesting. So it sounds like in that situation, the majority of dancers are choosing to be independent contractors for whatever reason, but that then excludes them from getting benefits like health insurance or, you know, what like short-term disability or workers' comp or anything like that. And so, wow, I'm sure that's good as far as like you're getting to take home the money you earn. That also kind of leaves you vulnerable in other areas, especially if this is your full-time job.
Yeah, I mean, there's girls who have gotten injured and they can't, you know, work for multiple weeks or months, and then girls who get pregnant, like there's a certain time when you can't dance, like girls will dance when they're pregnant, but not, you know, there's a certain point when you have to stop for your health and your baby's health. But yeah, so it's there is still a lot of like vulnerability with that, and so I think just looking towards what people are fighting for with the unions and stuff to see what kind of changes we should be working towards. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. This is great that there's starting to be more change and more, you know, fight for change. Cause it's an industry, it's a business, it's, you know, and it needs rights. Like, sex workers need rights and historically have not had them.
So, and I think, right. I mean, we know it's going to happen. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I was going to say joining Actors Equity, I think, is a really good step for that. Cause I think it is a good combo because we are performers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I guess that's a good way to get into that is by saying, like, we're performers, so we would fall under Actors Equity. I'd never really considered that. But and then I forgot what I was gonna say the first time around, but what has it how do people react? Or how have they reacted when you have talked about your job? I'm sure you probably get varied reactions depending on the person, but.
Yeah, I think my family mainly is the ones who are like, oh, like, you know, yeah, this makes sense. Like, my family knows me. They know that I'm like, I've always been very like non-inhibited and like I am good at talking to people and getting to know people, and I love performing, so like they kind of get it. But I think their main issue is like, well, I want you to be safe, I want you to like not have to worry about people hurting you at work, so that's kind of their main concerns. It's like a hesitance, but I don't think they ever judged me in any way about like just doing that work, you know.
It's a safety thing for them.
It's, yeah, like, it's more of like, be, I want you to be okay. And I'm, you know, my club in Ohio has had a lot more safety issues than my club in Chicago. So in a way, I'm kind of glad I distanced myself. Like, when I go back home, my mom's like, don't go to work there. And it is because it is a lot less safe there. So, and it just gets worse with time.
Wow, man. Yeah. Curious why you think that is. Why would an Ohio club be less safe than a Chicago club?
Well, I think the main thing is we sell alcohol there at the Ohio club, so it's like people are drunk, so they're gonna like get into fights. Also, like, people have, like, all the guards have guns, like they come in with big guns, and I think that kind of sets the tone a little bit, you know, for the club. So like, there was a shooting there, and obviously I don't know what happened. Like, there's been shootings there before, but there was one recently where it was like, yeah, there was a fight outside and multiple people ended up getting shot in the foot. And I'm like, I would not be surprised if it was just the guard like breaking up the fight and choosing to shoot people in the foot to break.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
There was just a lot more fighting, and it wasn't, it usually the dancers were safe from that, but the customers were the ones who would be getting into fights or shooting at each other or whatever. So.
Mm-hmm.
And when a place has a reputation like that, then it tends to really only draw a rough crowd, like, exactly. People that are just like, I'm just there to have a couple drinks and like watch them dancing and have a good time and go home are probably going to avoid those places. So yeah. Then, you know,
Michael.
Yeah.
And that's what one of the Star Gardens like requests was, that they stop serving people when they got belligerent, because a lot of, you know, places will overserve because yeah, money. That guy is going to spend a lot more money. Yeah. But it puts your dancers at risk, you know?
Yeah.
How have you experienced stigma? Just kind of like in your interactions with friends, people you meet when you tell them what you do?
I don't think I've experienced much stigma. I've kind of, you know, told people at a point where I feel comfortable with them. I think I had stigma when I first came into the industry because I had read this horrifying short story by Roxane Gay, which is really like a beautiful, it's from Difficult Women, and it's like a beautiful collection of stories. But there was one where this girl was being stalked by a guy at a strip club. And I was like, oh my gosh, I just never want to open myself up to having someone follow me and, like, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I don't want to become someone that someone wants to stalk. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of issues with stalking because, you know, guys can become obsessed. But we do try to avoid that. That's why you don't give out any personal information, and they walk you to your car, or they write down the number of your Uber. Like, they keep everything super safe in that regard. But yeah, so that was my stigma coming in. And I was also just really uncomfortable with men, which is another thing. But yes, as far as stigma, I don't think I have had a lot of stigma, but I know if I just was open with it, it would be
probably. Yeah. Yeah, just being selective about who you tell. I feel like I remember, if you don't mind me referencing this, when you told people at improv, and people were like, thought you were joking.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? Nuh-uh. Like, they were just like, haha. And you're like, no, seriously.
Like, yeah, people don't expect it from me. And also, yeah, like, sometimes I will catch people saying stuff about strippers or about strip clubs before I tell them, or I see that and I choose not to tell them. But I remember somebody being like, well, it's better than being a stripper, or, you know, you could be working at a strip club, or like in improv making fun of strippers or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or stand up, like in the comedy world, there's a lot of jokes about strippers.
Yeah.
But so I just kind of sit there and like let people talk. I think that's my approach with a lot of things, is just kind of sit there and let people talk. I don't need to voice my opinions. I'll just see what they say, because that gives you information about who that person is and what they believe, you know.
And then also protects you, like, from like harassment from them, or you know like you said, it's a job where you have to be careful, and you don't want to share that with people that you don't know are gonna treat you respectfully once they know about you. Yeah. Do you do pole, like floor work? So, like what do you, huh?
Our club is like, doesn't have a pole on the stage, so we do a lot of like floor work, and then there's like two poles that you can go to at different points in the night. My old club had poles on stage, so I did a lot of just like, you know, basic tricks. I can do basic tricks, but I've always been more of a, like, I have some floor moves, I have some pole tricks, but I'm gonna ride on my ability to make people laugh and my ability to like have deep conversations with people, while still in character, never letting myself get vulnerable. But like, that's kind of what I've been riding on. And I do think, you know, how you look, like being presentable, you know, you can whatever, but like how you look, how you dance is good. It's going to get you money, but your personality is what's going to get you the most money. Your ability to sell things is going to be getting you.
I didn't even think about that, that like you talk to them. You talk to
Yeah. I mean, that's the majority of what I do.
I just was pictured you like dancing on the stage. I didn't like think about you. You're probably so good at that.
Huh?
Sorry, what did you say?
I said that's all I do. I mean, there are girls who will like spend, you know, hours like going up and down the stairs trying to like change their outfit or fix their makeup, and they're like, well, I'm not selling anything. Maybe if I change my outfit. I have a few outfits that I use and I, you know, wash and rotate between, but I try not to put a lot of money into it because I'm like, A, I'm taking money I made and using it on this. And then B, I'm not going to be running up and down the steps when I could be on the floor talking to people and selling stuff, selling rooms and things.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I've spent hours. I've spent like 6 hours just talking to someone before, and that's what they wanted, you know?
Yeah, because your body's so good. I mean, you're hilarious. Like, you do improv, you're a comedian. Like, there's a reason I'm friends with you. Like, you're so much fun. So I imagine that's so useful for you at work. So that makes sense.
And that's definitely like when you hear like other sex workers talk, they're like, majority of my job is like talking to the person, which is like a kind of sad for the person, you know, because it's like you're really looking for company. But also like just shows that there is so much more that goes into that. It's not, you're not just selling sex. You are also selling companionship, conversation, giving someone attention, giving someone self-esteem. I mean, really, they probably should go to therapy, you know, if they are needing those things on a regular basis, but there's still nothing wrong with that. And so it's interesting. Like, from what I've heard, I don't have personal experience with this, but from what I've heard people say, both like patrons and sex workers, is that connection, that relationship, and being able to talk to somebody is what brings them back. I mean, that's the interesting thing.
And I do think about that a lot, because that is kind of a big thing that draws me to this. Also, I think that talking and having fun can be entertainment for older people who just want to have fun and party. Like, you know, I love going up to guys with like my friends and being like, let's go like just mess around and have fun. And people will pay for that because they want to be guaranteed that they're just going to have a good time and like feel like a part of a group. And I think that it is something, you know, you say like, you know, you should go to a therapist or whatever, but sexual and romantic needs are not met by that. You know, like, I think of it as a theater person and someone who loves like learning and education and stuff, we always talk about like the liminal space, which is the space where you just have time and attention to just work through something or mess around with different ideas. And that's how I feel like the strip club is, in a sexual and romantic sense. It's a place for people to, who maybe don't have much experience, to say, well, what do you like? Like, this is what I like. Is that weird? Or like, you know, how am I going to approach a girl? What kind of things can I say to a girl? How would she react? Let me say this out loud for the first time, because maybe I haven't ever asked a girl this question before. And so I think like that is part of it that is fulfilling to me beyond, you know, I don't want it to be just a money thing, even though money is the main reason I do it. I want it to be something that I feel good about other than that. And when I'm giving someone who has like a disability or is really socially anxious, or their wife died or something, you know, like, so, or they were just cheated on, like someone like that, I can just give them a good night and talk to them and listen to them and have fun with them. Like, that's fulfilling to me. And I think it's valuable for people to have a space where their sexuality can be expressed and it's not judged.
I 100% agree with that. Like, I think if this was more of a cultural thing that was accepted for people to have spaces like that. I mean, I don't think sex work should be, any of it should be illegal, obviously, but also I feel like why does it have to be so hidden? And why can't there be places where it is appropriate and expected? that people are going to talk about sex or, you know, explore their sexuality in safe ways. And then they can go back to their 9-to-5, go back to their lives, be a productive member of society, and not feel caged in, not feel judged, or not feel like they're being stifled in some way. Like, so, you know, I totally get what you're saying. Like, you are also offering in that environment, doing the work you do, they probably feel very open. Like, she's clearly not judgmental. Like, you know, it's cool. Mm-hmm. I can talk about these things. I can kind of relax about this. And then getting that sort of that confirmation, that validation from you of like, now I've heard it all. Like, that's fine. You know, that's cool. Yeah. Like, you should do this. You should try this. A little bit of, well, you know, some friendship, although it's like still your job and you're still in character and performing. That is probably, maybe they can never have that conversation with their best friend or their partner or, you know, a sibling, but they feel like they can have it with you. And then they feel better about that afterwards.
Or they'll be like, one of my regulars who comes in will be like, I just got my hair cut, or I just got my shirt. And I'll be like, oh my gosh, you look so handsome. And it's right. Like, he did that and he wanted to feel like, you know, like validated for that. Or he wanted to feel like he was getting ready for a date, even though maybe he didn't have anyone to go on a date with. Or there was a guy who came after prom in a full tuxedo and I like did dances with him. And it was like, like I had a terrible prom, and I'm like, okay, let's have fun then. Like, let's have fun.
Yeah, it's therapeutic. Like, it's similar to therapy in more ways than I thought about. Like, mm-hmm. it's therapeutic, mm-hmm. and you know, like confidentiality. Like, you're not telling anyone about this. You're not going around and saying, "Hey, Brandon came from this high school after prom, and he said this to me." Like. It's what happens between you and Brandon stays with you and Brandon. You
know? We're not saying all names discussed in this are fictional. There's not real people.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so interesting because, like you said, you were already a dancer. Like, you have dance experience. So do you get to be, you know, I guess that's like a creative outlet as well. Like, you get to use your dance experience for this specifically in a place where it's going to be appreciated. And not just, you know, like, yeah, maybe you have a couple moves that you do that you're like, yes, I know I'm good at this. This looks good. I'm going to do this. But you also have just a training and understanding of dance.
Yeah, I think it was one of the few things I could do during the pandemic as well that was giving me that, like, I'm around people, I'm performing on a stage, like, it was fun. But I also didn't feel as much pressure to be like, my name is attached to this, I have to produce something that is good or something. It's more just like fun. And that's the kind of thing I gravitate towards anyway, something that's more a lived experience rather than like outputting a product for somebody to say, yes, this is good or no, this is bad, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah. So you can experiment in that way. It's a way to be creative and experiment and be like, you're not really going to fail. And nobody is being critical in that way of your talent. So you get to just kind of be and experience it.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. I already know some of this because you've told me, but like, in case our listeners are curious, you work at a nonprofit as well, and you're training, like, you have another career path you're following as well. Is that correct?
Yeah. For that, it's kind of, I have grown up doing theater and performance and art and stuff like that. So kind of my career goal, I guess, is to just do, you know, work that combines healing and social justice and theater. So that's kind of what I'm doing now with the nonprofit, and that's what I want to keep doing in the future. So yeah.
Cool.
That's really awesome. That's, I also do theater and have done it since like middle school. And of course I'm a therapist full time. That's my day job, you know, is to be a therapist. But it's cool to have that balance of like, there is my professional work and like, I get, you know, a passion and like something that gives me meaning and feels like I'm contributing, you know, to humanity in a way and all that good stuff. And then there's like my creative side that is, you get to express and have fun and just be creative and just enjoy it as a hobby. For me, I'm not, you know, making money off of it, but it's, I feel like having that balance has made things so much better and has reduced my burnout so much in just every part of my life. And I have started telling my clients, like, especially if they have a job that does not require them or allow them to be very creative, I'm like, you need to find a hobby or something else for a creative outlet, because we humans, like, we need to balance that. We have to be able to have that, some sort of expression like that. But I think that's kind of like the dream for creative people, is to combine all of those things into a career and have like a passion, a purpose, and also get to express that part of themselves.
Yeah, I think my main goals with everything I do is just to bring both fun and like understanding to people, and to have it be like people focused, which is why I like theater. And then also I like stripping and way more than any like digital content or something, because I love being present with people.
Cool. And we totally understand that. We know, I totally get that, being present with people. That's a very special moment. And it's a great responsibility to have, that somebody is letting you into an intimate part of themselves, a vulnerable part of themselves, as they would with their therapist or as they would with, you know, a dancer that they frequent and they have a relationship with. Like, they're being vulnerable in that moment and they're trusting you to handle it with care, and be professional about it. And so that's kind of cool. I don't know. I guess stripping and therapy have a lot in common that we found out that we did not know.
I never thought about that.
Yeah. That's the weird, like, that's the eye roll comparison people make when they're like, it's just a naked therapist. I feel like that's minimizing for both our careers, but yeah. They do have similarities, yes.
Yeah, you're right.
It's just, if
you're
a just naked, like, therapist. That's so funny.
If you're just simplifying it, yes, but obviously there's more to that. But yeah.
No, they are similar. And I forget, you know, because I'm so entrenched in it, that there are misunderstandings of what we do. And so whenever I say something and I hear somebody say, oh, I didn't know you did that, like, I didn't know that was a part of it, or that was a part of it, then I'm like, dang, I didn't realize there's so much misconceptions about it.
Mm-hmm. yeah absolutely. So thank you for clearing some of that up and talking not only about what you do but also sharing some experiences you've had, and you know, and stories and your perspective on things, and hopefully that people, you know, who are listening to this, maybe they were intrigued because they were like, oh, this is the topic we're talking about, okay, I want to listen. But now, you know, now they're like, oh, okay, wow, I really like learned something, I really got a different perspective on this whole situation. So thank you for giving us your time and your emotional labor to do this.
Yes, this was so interesting. I learned so much. I just feel like since I've met you, I've learned so much about stripping and sex work. It's been eye-opening, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you guys for being open and for being interested to learn, because it is really nice to have people look at it with non-judgment and want to learn more and support us. So thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's our show. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow us on wherever you get your podcasts. And if you use Apple Podcasts, or no, we changed it. Sorry. We thought it was just Apple Podcasts where you could leave a review. And all of them, you can leave a rating and review. I pulled up our old script. I apologize for that.
Whatever. Just leave a rating and review. It's all good.
Sorry.
It's all good. And don't forget to follow the show's Instagram for updates on new episodes at Just Mental Health Podcast. And that is with a period between each of those words. This is Steph.
And M.
And Goldie.
Signing off. Thanks for listening.